Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to be back with you after another harrowing week out on the road. And so much has happened since I talked to you last that if I didn't know better, I might think that that Barry Ho is somehow watching my life. And somehow keeping tabs on me. And every time he finds out something's popped up where McBurney's got to travel from a Sunday to a Sunday, well, Barry Ho starts letting it rip with the big policy maneuvers. I mean, we had the birth certificate and then the action in Pakistan, in Abbottabad, Pakistan. So if I didn't know any better, I'd think Big Brother was watching, but I must confess, I'm one of the fewer than a half a dozen people in my circle of influence who can say with complete and total knowledge that Big Brother is not watching me. He's not. He's just not that interested, okay? I'm not that interesting a person. My life isn't that exciting. But I know there's a lot of people out there who Big Brother is watching, and I aspire to be like you someday. All right. Now, what should I talk about the birth certificate? I was going to talk about the birth certificate last week, as you can well imagine, but life got in the way. My day job got in the way. And so what can we say about the birth certificate? It was a fun story. I had fun with it. I laughed. I cried. I joked. Well, I didn't cry. I laughed. I joked. I snickered. I sneered. And after a while, even I was starting to wonder, why is it that Barry won't release his birth certificate? But less than 2 weeks ago, in classic Alinskyite style, Barry Ho released the document, and he and the media have essentially made anyone who continues to talk about or question Ho's eligibility, they're now marginalized as a kook. It was a classic Alinskyite move, probably plotted from the very beginning. From the very first day that the Hillary Clinton campaign brought up the birth certificate, Barry Ho and his Alinskyite accolades kept the birth certificate in their back pocket for a moment when they needed to marginalize conservatives. And they took it out and they fired it on, what's the guy's name with the comb over? Trump, Donald Trump. They used it on Donald Trump, but they've effectively... it's the end of the story. I'm sorry. It was fun while it lasted, but it's the end. And I agree with Bob Enyart that the Ho administration could not have released a more suspicious-looking document. I mean, it's just, it is kind of fun to watch some of the analysis. To even discuss the birth certificate, you're obviously crazy, and the media has moved on. 70% of the birthers have moved on. Well played, Mr. Ho. We'll have to give you that. But I had warned all my birther friends that not to hang their hat on that. But hey, it was fun while it lasted. All right, enough of politics. I'm sick of politics. I was driving across Denver. A couple weeks ago. And I saw what to me is a symbol of the past and the future of Denver, Colorado, one of America's great western cities. I saw something that to me represented both the past, well, it acknowledged the past, and pointed to the inevitable future of Denver. I drove past a warehouse. If you've ever driven through Denver, come here, walk with me on this. If you've ever driven through Denver, when you go across the elevated deck of I-70 headed east, you'll see the warehouse district there on the south side of the highway. And it's quite impressive. Block after block, mile after mile of warehouses probably dating back to the turn of the century. Certainly, many of them built in the 50s, 60s, 70s. I saw a giant warehouse just off I-70 as I'm cruising along. And in faded paint on the side of the warehouse, and very well done, mind you, was the word cabinets. Cabinets, I said. This was a cabinet warehouse where cabinets were no doubt fabricated and shipped all over the West, all over the United States, perhaps all over the world, from right here in Denver, Colorado. And the word cabinets was painted. It was huge. I would say 12 feet high, 20, 30 feet long, cursive script, very well done. A craftsman obviously painted the word cabinets. And on the front, that was on the side of the warehouse facing I-70. On the front of the warehouse facing west as I drove, you could see the name of the business, but it was so faded that you couldn't really make out the name. And then there's a phone number. You could see 303, but then it just kind of faded and washed. And obviously, the cabinet warehouse has been in disrepair for some time. But worry not, Denver. You do have a future. Because strapped across the front of the warehouse on a giant banner covering up the name of the old business was a huge white banner with a giant marijuana leaf on it and the word dispensary. Yeah, there you have it, Denver. We know what your past was, and we can see what your future is going to be. That was depressing for me, okay? I'm a man who started my working life working with my hands. I stopped doing it as quickly as I could because I found it to be tiring, quite exhausting. But now I'm a salesman and I sell things that are made with someone's hands, made in the USA, as a matter of fact. But that was just kind of depressing to me. And maybe I just think too much, but well, there you go. All right, do we need to go? Well, we've addressed the birth certificate. I know I'm a week late, day late and a dollar short, but what can I do? I'm doing what I can, folks. You're lucky to have me back this week, frankly. I'm serious. I can't believe I'm doing this show after such a harrowing road trip out there. But I got to tell you, folks, there are few things as beautiful as the interchange between industry and nature, between mechanism and arbor, than driving along I-8 in southern San Diego County and seeing the interchange between Interstate 8 and the 805 as it works its way and meanders up into the hills and the trees, and it's just beautiful. How many people are affected by freeway on-ramps in the way I was? It almost brought a tear to my eye as I saw the delicate balance between man's building and construction and nature's beauty. It was glorious. Glorious, I tell you. All right, let's get to the news, folks. Enough of this semi-witty banter. Let's get to the news. Big story, folks, as we always like to start with the biggest story of the week, or of the last 2 weeks, however it might be. We go to San Francisco to the NBC News affiliate there. A ban on circumcision will likely go to San Francisco voters in November. That's right, it'll be on the ballot. A voter in San Francisco has submitted more than 12,000 signatures to the election office last week, and that's well more than the 7,000 some odd needed to get the measure on the ballot. The proposed new law would make it a misdemeanor to circumcise a person before they are 18 years old. Now, in San Francisco, you can take your fellow man into the restroom at a bar in the Castro District and have your way and do what you will. But the voters in San Francisco are going to be asked to decide a circumcision. I think it should be a felony to circumcise someone if they are over 18 years old. I mean, that seems rather barbaric. I'm glad it happened to me when I was, I don't know, a couple of days old. I don't think I remember it. But maybe I do. No, I don't. I don't remember it. I don't really remember it. So if I had a choice between waiting until I was over 18 or having it done at like a couple days old, I'm going to go with I'm going to go with 2 days old. I unfortunately, I haven't had to face that decision yet because my extremely attractive audio engineer has yet to bear me a son. She has borne me 3 very beautiful girls. My dear, if that day were to come and we had to take that decision as to whether or not to circumcise, would you stand with this voter in San Francisco? Or would you want to wait till he's 18 or let him decide for himself?
I give you that authority.
So I can make the decision?
Because I don't know anything about it.
All right. I'm saying snip, snip. Let's get it done, okay? I mean, it seems much more, what's the word I'm looking
clean.
For? Yeah, it seems more hygienic.
You know,
but that's, I don't know.
Japanese people don't do it usually, right?
Oh, is that right? The Japanese don't circumcise on a regular basis?
So people get easy.
People get in. Okay, well, that's too much. We don't want to get into that.
Anyway,
people are going to be turning off the show.
Because of that.
I see. Festering and pus and all of that. Yeah, I mean, who needs that? But anyway, in San Francisco, you can take any mind-altering substance you want, sit down on the curb in the city and just ingest it and go crazy and act like a maniac. But they're looking to regulate the circumcision of your children and also the intake of Happy Meals, I think I reported on a few weeks ago. But anyway, so there you have it, folks. Be watching that story. Earth-shattering. All right, now we're going to get to Osama bin Laden. I know. I got emails from listeners all week. Doug, we're waiting to hear with bated breath what you think about the Osama bin Laden affair. And I am going to get to that, but there are other important stories. First, I want to talk about democracy in the Middle East, this wonderful, fabulous explosion of democracy. They call it the Arab Spring, the Muslim Spring, I forget. Something like that. The Arab Spring, I think, when they're going to throw out all the dictators and Benjamin Franklin and George Washington are going to rise to prominence in Egypt, in Syria, in Bahrain, just all across the Middle East, and they're going to have democracy. Well, here we go. From Cairo, a majority of, this is from the Associated Press, a majority of Egyptians believe laws in their country should observe the teachings of the Quran. Yeah, that's more than half. They believe that the law should be based on the Quran. Egyptians also, this was a poll, by the way. Egyptians are open to the inclusion of religious parties in future governments. And that's interesting because, according to the article, Islamic parties are expected to make a significant showing in the upcoming Egyptian vote, with half the people saying that it's very important for religious parties to be part of a future government. Only 36% of those polled believe it is very important for Christians and other minorities to freely practice their religion. So democracy is going to happen in the Middle East. And the people are going to get what they want. They're going to get the one man, one vote. You know, one Muslim, one vote. And they're going to vote eventually to kill the Jews. And then eventually they're going to vote to kill everybody else, including all their Arab neighbors. So it's just beautiful, wonderful, fantastic, fabulous thing that's happening over there. All right, now. Syria, more from the Middle East, from Fox News. Syria is set to join the UN Human Rights Council, known here as the UNHuman Rights Council. A State Department spokesman last week said the U.S. would oppose Syria's bid to the Human Rights Council, calling it inappropriate and hypocritical. But then that person was reminded that they worked for the U.S. State Department and they're not allowed to use the word hypocritical because it might reflect badly on the secretary, Madam Secretary. But according to Fox News, it would seem that Syria is virtually guaranteed a seat on the UNHuman Rights Council, having been selected as one of 4 candidates for the Asian bloc. Did you know that Syria is included in the Asian bloc? That's got to make you Asians feel pretty bad,
yeah,
my dear.
Asian.
She's renouncing her Asian citizenship. She didn't realize Syria was involved. The Barry Ho administration is working hard to keep Syria from gaining a seat at the UNHuman Rights Council. As a prerequisite for membership to the Human Rights Council, countries are asked to fill out a human rights pledge to respect and support the inalienable and indivisible nature, I said, of all human rights. What does that mean? To respect and support the inalienable and indivisible nature of all human rights. Boy, that's kind of an odd way to put it, but it's written by the UN. I mean, everything they write is designed to leave enough wiggle room to kill the Jews. Keep that in mind. Let's see. Syria believes that its membership on the Human Rights Council would contribute toward enriching the quality of dialogue, cooperation, and action aimed at promotion and protection of human rights for all peoples. And you know, you can't really, the Syrians have a point. I mean, they are as civilized as much as any of the so-called civilized Western nations who sit on the UN Human Rights Council, who slaughter millions of their own citizens in the womb every year, or at least they authorize it. And many of the governments outright participate in it through federal funds going to abortion, just like your government and mine, your tax dollars and mine. But Syria, I don't know if abortion is legal in Syria. I'm sure it's committed on a regular basis. But is it legal? I mean, I don't know. I should have done my research before I went on the air. But frankly, it doesn't matter because I know it's legal here. And it seems a bit hypocritical for Hillary Rodham Clinton and the others there at the State Department to have any problem with the Syrians being on the UN Human Rights Council, seeing as we seem to be a bit hypocritical on the issue. Guitar lick, but we don't have time. We don't have time, boys. Put those guitars away. We got a lot of stuff going on. I said, put them away, boys. Cut it out. I remember standing in front of my mom and dad had a wall of mirrors in the dining room back in the late 70s, early 80s. That was big. If you owned a house that was less than 900 square feet, you just put one wall. You just put mirrors. And I can remember when my parents were out, obviously, I'd put Fastway on their hi-fi, and I would dance around the broomstick singing that song. And what was nice about the broomstick is it can act as both a microphone stand and a guitar. That's right, if you need it. So anyway, I hope my parents aren't listening. I'd be fairly embarrassed if they knew what I was doing while they were out of the house. But anyway, that is the lick that inspired me to play guitar. And I asked my dad for a guitar when I was, 12, 13, 14, all of those years. I kept asking him. And he knew I'd fall in with the wrong crowd. So he never gave me a guitar when I was young and foolish and impressionable. But he did give me a fine Martin acoustic when I was about 32. And I just played it at church on Easter. So thanks, Dad. Thanks for coming through with the guitar. All right, we got to get back to the news. I don't feel like doing the news. I'd much rather tell you about my boring life that Big Brother has no interest in. But I don't think you'd be that interested either. So the Osama bin Laden affair, let's get to that. Because, folks, for a long time, you know that I have been of the opinion that Osama bin Laden had died some time ago. Parts unknown in Waziristan or Pakistan or Krapistan. I don't know what stan, but I figured he was gone, okay? And the only thing that takes the edge off me being wrong then is being confident that I'm right now. that he has departed the planet. He did not cross go. He did not receive 72 virgins. But he has been introduced personally to Jesus Christ. That reminds me, I'm having a little debate with an atheist. A devout atheist, a fella I knew years ago who I ran back into. And he said in an email that if he met Jesus at a 7-Eleven, he would acknowledge that Jesus was cool and he would believe. And I sent him back an email and I said, if Jesus met you at 7-Eleven, you'd have to change your shorts. It would scare him, is what I'm trying to say.
Anyway.
And I wasn't that diplomatic about it either. All right, now, that's right, the big news. Osama bin Laden. Well, for a long time, folks, I have been warning you people about Pakistan. That Pakistan is bad. It's Islamic, and Islam is bad. I mean, the capital of their country is called Islamabad. I mean, and if you think Islamabad is bad, imagine how bad Abbottabad has got to be. I've been practicing that all week, just hoping I could pull it off. I mean, think about how bad Abbottabad has got to be. That sounds like the name of a Pakistani intelligence officer. Think about how bad Abbottabad has got to be. I'm working for intelligence. Osama, we have no idea what Osama is. He's a very bad man. All right. Anyway, maybe I'll go through some of these stories and I'll be able to formulate an opinion, because I was driving. I didn't see any of this on TV. It happened. It all happened while I was driving across country, so I didn't get to see the video, and I had to listen to Barry Ho's rather cumbersome speech on the radio, and I felt like it would be immature for me not to be happy, because I was a little upset that I was wrong. And, you know, you've got to check that, right? So I wanted to pull over, you know, and stop and I don't know, buy a bottle of champagne and join a crowd in front of a state capitol building or something. But I was in the middle of nowhere, so I wasn't able to stop and party with anyone, although I would have. Just to try to get over the fact that I was wrong, because I was really steamed about that.
Yeah, right.
And how many conservatives will admit to you that it was annoying that Barry Ho was the one to take Osama bin Laden down? I was frankly annoyed, okay? And I'll admit it. Call me immature, whatever you want. I hate to see good things happen to rotten, despicable people. But we'll give Barry Ho credit where credit is due. Although, I've seen the birth certificate, okay, Barry? Haven't seen the pictures of...
I don't buy it.
You don't buy it? Oh, she doesn't buy it. Okay. Do you think Big Brother's watching you?
No.
Okay, well, we have... officially, you're not buying it.
I don't say I don't buy it. I want to see.
You want to see it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they brought the head.
Yeah, that's what they said. They didn't want a shrine. I'll tell you what I'd have done. I'd have put his head in a cage, and I would have put it in the middle of Fort Benning, and I would have created a shrine to Osama bin Laden. And I would have said, any one of you jihadists who want to come and worship, come right through the gates here at Fort Benning. We've got a shrine. Anyway, but I guess we're much too civilized for that. You remember what David did with the head of Goliath? He lifted it off his shoulders.
Yeah,
he chopped his head off with his own sword, carried it back to his tent, and kept it on his mantle. Yeah. David seems like a civilized guy. I mean, except for the whole Bathsheba thing, you know. But, I mean, he was a man after God's own heart, and he had a guy's head on his mantle. Anyway, so I want to see the pictures, too. And I've got something to say about that. Let's go to this. I pulled this off Politico because I was listening to Jay Carney do press conferences. As I'm driving from here to there, and I don't have access to TV, and I'm listening to everything happen on the radio, and I just thought, surely Jay Carney is going to be fired after this press conference. And then the next day, I thought, well, that guy's career is over. And then the next day, I thought, okay, Jay Carney's going to disappear off the face of the earth, never to be heard from again. But he still got a job, and it was just embarrassing to listen to. Well, everyone from Leon Panetta, who, heaven help me, I can't believe he's the head of the CIA. I'm perplexed. I'm almost paralyzed with fear for our country because Leon Panetta is the head of the Central Intelligence Agency. But, you know, fortunately, our intelligence assets on the ground and military operatives have been doing their job for the last 9.5 years. And it finally culminated in an operation that... Barry Ho did little except not blow it. We have to give Barry credit for that, I think, although we haven't seen the body yet. But Jay Carney, it was just embarrassing because Panetta said the picture's coming out, then Barry Ho said no, and Carney didn't know what was going on. He wouldn't say whether Obama had seen the photo. He said he didn't want to get into who's seen the photos or where the photos are. This is a story from Politico, underscoring the complicated nature of the American team's attack on bin Laden. Carney was caught in a crossfire of his own when he was asked about the number of floors in the compound, to which Carney responded, wait, now even I'm getting confused, as he flipped through his papers trying to figure out what was going on. Carney also would not say whether or not bin Laden's sea burial was videotaped, although other officials in the government had said that it indeed was. And a number of officials had said they had seen the photos.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you something, folks. Oh, well, should I do that first? Where is this story on that alien pod person? Oh, yeah, Senator Scott Brown. Great white hope of the Tea Party movement in Massachusetts. This moronic, bozo, liberal scumbag. He said he saw a picture of Osama bin Laden dead, so he's out there saying, well, he doesn't have to release it. We've seen it and we know it. And turns out, Scott, it was a fake. You've got to be embarrassed, you moronic, bozo, alien pod person. There's a fake photo that had made the rounds after U.S. forces allegedly shot bin Laden. So this is a story from the Boston Herald. Now, we cover a lot of crime stories here, right? And whenever someone is alleged to have done something, or if there's any question about anything, then the reporters always stick the word allegedly in there. Mm-hmm. But in this story, it says Scott Brown fell victim to a fake photo of the Al-Qaeda leader's death that made the rounds after U.S. forces shot bin Laden on Sunday. There's no alleged. There's no alleged. And if you say it's alleged, you're a kook and you should be over in a padded room with all those birthers. They're calling them deathers.
Oh,
well, you've been marginalized in an Alinskyite fashion. I'll explain it all. I know you weren't here for the very first segment. I'm willing to let that slide. But that's what they're trying to do. Now, anyone who questions anything about Barry Ho is a nut job. You wear a tinfoil hat, the black helicopters, all of it. And Scott Brown, well, he's just embarrassing for everyone. But what was I trying to get to? Oh, yes, the pictures. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my humble opinion that in this modern technical age, if a picture of bin Laden's dead body exists, it will come out. And it will come out fairly soon. If there's video of the raid, it will come out. And it will come out fairly soon. If there's pictures or video, they had to make the leap across several platforms of technology. At any point in that chain of custody of pictures and video and data, there's 150 losers in and your and I military who would slip in a thumb drive and grab it. Now, I know all you people who were never in the military, you have to bow and grovel and scrape and say how great the military is, and they're all heroes, and they're fantastic, and they're wonderful, and they prepared, and they pulled this off flawlessly. But for those of us who were in the military, we're allowed to say what the military is. It's a huge, lumbering, cumbersome bureaucracy that's main objective is to waste money and waste time. If you lived it, you know it. Now, there is a small core of hardcore people who actually do the fighting and the war making who are generally heroic. But the vast military expanse that exists, they're not all heroes, folks. You're telling me that there's not some PFC who didn't stick a thumb drive in and grab a picture of Osama bin Laden dead? So, folks, if the video and the pictures don't come out, and if they don't come out soon, it's my belief that they don't exist. Okay? So, I mean, I don't have a tinfoil hat on, and I've already established the fact that I don't think Big Brother is watching me. But I would like to see the evidence. And the thing is, here's the thing, folks, about Barry Ho and why the birth certificate became an issue. There's something about this fella that doesn't sit right with your average American. There's just something about it, and it's not the fact that he's black. I mean, it's not. I mean, Herman Cain, he's a black guy. He won the Fox debate the other night, and all. You should have seen all these crackers in the audience clapping for him and saying how great he was. It's not that Barry's black. We can deal with black. It's the mystery behind the Marxist, communist agenda that he's executing upon the nation that has us all a little bit uneasy. Now, and for those of you who voted for the guy, and now you say, well, he's not what he said he was, please, just get out of the country. You are an idiot. You shouldn't be allowed to vote. You might not should be allowed to operate a motor vehicle if you voted for Barry Ho and now think you're getting something different. But there's something about him that makes us all uncomfortable. Why? There's something, right? We're not sure about where he's born. He won't release his school records. He won't release essays. We don't know where he was for that year when he went to Pakistan. And there's all these questions about Barry. And on top of all that, he's a Marxist. He's a communist. He's a radical. And he's a baby killer. So, I mean, we feel uncomfortable with the guy. So some people, Barry, they have to give more evidence than is necessary because of their questionable background and past. And Barry, you're one of those guys. So you need to release the photos and the video. Just because we don't trust you, okay? That's why, Barry, we don't trust you. And for those of you, again, I mean, if Barry's the first time you've woken up to the idea that our country's been hijacked by radicals, I mean, for me, it goes all the way back to, I just remember sitting on the couch with my dad one night, and Richard Nixon was on the TV screen, and I didn't know what was going on, but Richard Nixon was resigning the presidency on television. And I asked my dad, what's this? I don't know. I couldn't have been, what was it, 1974? I was like 6 years old. I was a very smart kid. That's why our kids are so smart. But I asked my dad, or maybe my dad told me, because my dad liked to talk about stuff like this. He told me the president is resigning. He has to quit. And I can't remember exactly what the words were, but I asked my dad why, and he said something like he's a lowlife, lying, scumbag, thieving, liberal piece of filth. It was something along those lines. So my suspicion of the, especially the executive branch, goes way back. And then take it forward. I mean, you've got Waco, you've got Elian Gonzalez, you've got George Bush spending us into oblivion, acting like a conservative. And I don't know, maybe I was fortunate enough to wake up sooner than some of you poor people out there. But what can I say? Now's the time to go ahead and wake up. I've just been informed by my extremely attractive audio engineer that is now Barry Ho's official theme song, because according to the media, from here on out, at least until Election Day 2012, he can do no wrong. Indeed, he is fabulous, no matter what he does. All right, now let's get back to the hard news. Have I expounded all my pathetic opinions and jokes? Have I done all my jokes? Did I ask you to think about how bad a bada bad has got to be? All right, I already did that joke. All right, so the jokes are done. Let's get back to the hard news. This is from the Washington Post. From Sana'a, Yemen, the U.S. military used a drone to strike last Thursday at an al-Qaeda target in Yemen. The information about the strike came from a security director in Yemen. I didn't know we had security personnel in Yemen who would still talk to us, but apparently we do. He said the men were killed when a missile struck their car. Now, that is just flat-out impressive that you can hit a car with a missile. I mean, that is pretty cool. The two men were active in al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. They're no longer as active as they were, apparently. When I first saw this break, I thought they're going to get Ayman al-Zawahiri, or maybe Gadan, or I think there's one other big one still out there, big fish. But then I realized Ayman al-Zawahiri, if they wanted to get Zawahiri? I apologize. If they wanted to get Ayman al-Zawahiri, they would probably have to do a missile strike on the military academy there in Abbottabad. He's probably hiding underneath it at this point. Of course, unbeknownst to the Pakistanis, who are our allies there in Islam is bad. All right. This was the final straw to me, because like I said, I'm just not a conspiracy theory type of guy. I like to discuss conspiracy theories, and I have fun with conspiracy theories, and there's nothing more fun than to sit around and have a couple of glasses of wine with someone and just walk down the trail of all the weird and wacky things that could be going on. But generally I'm not. But when Leon Panetta came out, this is from the Telegraph, Leon Panetta, director of the CIA, God help us all, revealed that there was a 25-minute blackout during which the live feed from cameras mounted to the helmets of the 24 U.S. forces was cut off. Panetta said, we had some observation of the approach there, but we did not have a direct flow of information as to the actual conduct of the operation itself. See, the actual conduct of the operation itself, we didn't have a direct flow of the actual conduct of the operation. That's one adjective too many, Leon. Something tells me that you're backing and filling, that you're shucking and jiving, Leon. I think something happened that they just don't want people to know about. I don't know. Who knows? It's like with the whole birth certificate. I mean, once it came out, it's like, pfft, okay. I mean, yeah, 95% chance that it's fake. But I always warned you birthers that when the Democrats decided to release a fake birth certificate, that they do a good job. All right, I don't want to get off on the birth certificate thing. He said we didn't have a direct flow of information as to the actual conduct, which as opposed to the conduct that we're telling you about. I don't know. The actual conduct of the operation itself as they were going through the compound. Mr. Panetta also revealed that the U.S. Navy SEALs made the final decision to kill bin Laden rather than the president. Now, that made me suspicious. It's like, what are you talking about? You're a Navy SEAL. You're an E6 in the military. The commander-in-chief has you on the video phone. You've got Osama bin Laden, your guns pointed at him. Who's it up to kill him? Well, I think it would be up to the president. And frankly, ladies and gentlemen, if they had a chance to capture Osama bin Laden, I think they should have captured him. Don't you think? He'd be a high value. I know. You don't have to remind me that I have always been an advocate of the summary execution of terrorists. But all summary means is as soon as possible and without a trial. Doesn't mean you don't get as much information out of the scumbag as you can before you whack them. And then I read this in the article, and this is the one thing I've read about this whole affair that has the flavor of truth, the ring of truth to it. One of bin Laden's daughters, who was present during the raid, claimed that her father was captured alive before he was killed. Now, were I the president of the United States, I would have captured Barry alive, and after about 3 days of just doing, I mean, if you have any questions about torture, we would have explored all those possibilities with Barry in the basement of his about-a-bad home there. And then I would have whacked him unceremoniously. I would have blown his brains out and thrown him in a ditch. Well, I'd have wrapped him in a pig first, and then yeah, I'd have brought him over to Fort Benning. But anyways, I would have held the guy and gotten as much out of him as I could, and I have a feeling that something like that happened. I don't know if they held him for a minute or 10 minutes or a few hours. I have a feeling something like that happened, and maybe our intelligence people don't want to let out what happened, and so hence all the confusion and the lies and, of course, the conspiracy swirl, because Barry Ho's an untrustworthy, suspicious character. That's all. Even if he's even in doing, I got an email from a listener who said it looks like Barry Ho and his MO finally did something right. To which I say, yes, they did something right, but in doing so, they've botched that. They've botched the handling of doing the right thing, which is what wicked people generally do. Sometimes they do the right thing for the wrong reason, and they generally mishandle the consequences. So anyway, that's my suspicion at this point. Anyway. But I'm glad Osama is dead. I'm sad that I haven't had an opportunity to see his carcass. All right. Now let's go back. Come back with me in the Wayback Machine to about 10 days ago before Osama bin Laden had been killed. Let's go to Kabul. This was from Yahoo News. Kabul, Afghanistan. 8 American troops and a U.S. contractor died Wednesday, 10 days ago, after an Afghan military pilot opened fire during a meeting at a Kabul airport. According to the coalition, the brother of the Muslim shooter said his brother had no ties to insurgents. The brother says, my brother was under economic pressure. He sold his house and he was going through a very difficult period of time in his life. So he chose to grab an AK-47 and shoot Americans, you know, because he was under some stress, pressure. You know how it is, right? I don't have to tell you. This economy, man, come on. Anyway, this is a fairly horrifying event, and according to the AP, it was the seventh time so far this year that members of the Afghan security forces or insurgents impersonating them have killed coalition soldiers or members of the Afghan security force. Only it's the seventh this year, but it just keeps happening over and over. It's enough to make your average white American start to think that maybe we can't trust these Afghanis and these Muslims. Maybe they're not trustworthy. Something doesn't sit with me right about the Muslims. Perhaps it's the fact that they worship Satan. Yeah, I need that echo box from the church lady. Anyway, maybe that's what it is. We're a little uncomfortable with a religion that worships the direct opposite of everything we worship. Well, except abortion is illegal in most Muslim countries. They don't believe in killing innocent unborn babies. Unless, of course, they're Jewish or Christian. But at least they draw the line somewhere. Here in America and in Europe, I mean, they'll bring a baby. They don't care. They'll kill it. They'll even fund the killing of it. All right, now I don't want to go back on that rabbit trail. The Taliban in Afghanistan has claimed responsibility for the attack that killed 8 American troops by an Afghan ally. So the Taliban says they did it. His brother says it was either file chapter 11 or, you know, kill some Americans because he was having some problems. All right. So the war goes on. More news? Do I want to do more news? Okay. So, folks, we're all coming off this high, right? Because we whacked Osama bin Laden. And then the details are a little fuzzy and we don't trust the guy in charge and all that. But, I mean, it's got to feel pretty good just thinking about a SEAL kicking down the door and blowing that guy away. I mean, it's got to give you a rush, right? You got to think, you know, despite what the past 4 presidents have put our military through, that perhaps our military can still protect us and keep us safe. And I'm just here to tell you, folks, I want to report to you that the folks in charge are doing their dead level best. Here's a story from the AP. The latest round of training materials asks United States Marines to consider their reactions to a wide range of scenarios involving homosexual members of the military. There are a lot of scenarios covered in the training, from seeing a member hanging around a gay bar to hearing locker room jokes from others who refuse to shower in front of gays. Members of the 1st Marine Corps Logistics Group reported to class last week at Camp Pendleton, and this is what our highly trained military professionals are learning as you and I go on about our daily lives and try to earn a living out there scrapping, trying to bring home the bacon in this monstrous Obama recovery. Our military is on the cutting edge, ladies and gentlemen. The training teaches United States Marines that there's nothing wrong with hanging around a gay bar. That's what they think. There's nothing wrong with hanging around a gay bar. Oh, I mean, need I say more? I want to say more, but, you know, I try to keep it really clean on this show. I don't do blue. I don't play blue, okay? So there's a lot of things I could say right there and notes I have here that I'm just going to leave aside. The officer who witnesses the loud locker room banter. Let's get back to the training. A Marine Corps officer who witnesses loud locker room banter aimed at gays and lesbians should remind the Marines that any discrimination or harassment is inappropriate. So, I mean, I was in the Marines. I showered with other Marines. I can't imagine an officer walking in and telling a bunch of Marines that anything is inappropriate in that setting. That simply would not be said. But anyways, for those who oppose the new policy, here we go, folks. For those who oppose the new policy, the Marine Corps says it doesn't expect anyone to change their personal beliefs. Still, everyone must follow orders. The training says, quote, "You remain obligated to follow orders that involve interaction with others who are gay or lesbian, even if an unwillingness to do so is based on strong, sincerely held moral or religious beliefs." A top-notch recruit. I almost can't read this because it's making me want to flee the country. A top-notch recruiter, let's say, who opposes the new policy cannot refuse a promising applicant on grounds of sexual orientation, but he may be granted early discharge. So you can't keep the queers out, Sergeant York, but we're happy to show you the door. If you don't want to dance and prance with them in the shower, and if that somehow makes you uncomfortable, go back to North Carolina and cling to your guns and religion, Sergeant York. We are going to go ahead and sign up. Well, I don't want to use anyone's name because, you know, we're going to go ahead and sign up the fag, Sergeant York. You go ahead and just go back and cling to your guns and religion. Okay, we're going to have the barracks are going to be redecorated and all of that. And here we go. The final cut, ladies and gentlemen. Now, the knife is in your gut if you were ever a Marine. Now they're going to twist it. Chaplains who preach at base chapels that homosexuality is a sin are entitled to express their religious beliefs during worship and then will be asked to kindly act hypocritically in their professional day-to-day conduct. Thank you, Chaplain Smith. We certainly do appreciate a fine, fine sermon on the dangers of sexual immorality. It really makes sense since we just showed that horrific VD movie last night to all the troops. Great sermon this Sunday morning. Could we show you the door? Is the Weekly Worldview. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. We don't have a lot of time to play around with the guitars and all that. Although that is who was that? Soundgarden. Going in the Wayback Machine. All right. Okay, so we're a little bit depressed after the whole Marine Corps hanging around the gay bar and the syphilis, all of that. But, make you feel a little bit better. There is trouble in Paradise City over, and I'm talking about Tehran, Iran. This is from The Guardian in London. Close allies of Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Did you think about how bad about a better got to be? Close allies. Excuse me while I clear my throat. Close allies of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad have been accused of using supernatural powers to further his policies amid an increasingly bitter power struggle between Ahmadinejad and the country's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. I think Ahmadinejad will win because he has more vowels in his name. Ahmadinejad. Yes, and more glottal scrapes. Ahmadinejad. Well, you've got Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Two glottal scrapes to one. Ahmadinejad takes it. All right. Several people said to be close to Ahmadinejad and his chief of staff, Esfandair Rahim Mashai, have been arrested. And they've been charged with being magicians and invoking jinns, which are spirits there in the Persian world, Persian vernacular. Let's see. An Iranian news website described one of the men who was arrested, Abbas Ghaffari, as, quote, a man with special skills in metaphysics and connections with unknown worlds. So this would all be funny, right? Because here you've got the mad Ayatollah and his clerics asserting that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and the Twelvers who surround him and are waiting for the Mahdi to be revealed. The mad, insane Ayatollahs are saying that Mahmoud and his people are a little too crazy to work with. And so it would all be funny if they weren't aspiring to nuclear weapons, because, I mean, even an argument between those two, they could end up nuking Tel Aviv. No, wait, that's the one thing they both agree on, is nuclear winter for Tel Aviv. Let's see here. Let's see if I can get these names out here. Abdul Hassan Bani Sadr, Iran's first post-revolution president, by the way, was impeached and exiled for allegedly attempting to undermine the clerical power of Khamenei, whatever his name is. So this isn't all new. So Ahmadinejad could be on his way out. That's right. He could be lecturing at NYU by the fall. Yeah, he could be tenured by next spring. The feud amongst the rulers in Iran has taken a metaphysical turn following the release of an Iranian documentary alleging the imminent return of the hidden Imam Mahdi, the revered savior of Shia Islam, whose reappearance is anticipated by believers in Shia Islam in a manner comparable to that with which Christian fundamentalists anticipate the second coming of Jesus. Yeah. Well, that's close, except that he's like the opposite of Jesus. He's anyway, that's... I get back to the whole satanic religion. I mean, you know how I feel about Islam and all that. Although I still hold to the position that even if Iran gets nuclear weapons, that the secular humanists on the university campuses in the Western world will be responsible for more harm, death, destruction, and misery than these backwards Islamists will ever be. But that being said, I'd rather they didn't have nuclear bombs, and I'd just assume if anything were wiped off the face of the map, that it would be the Islamic regime in Persia, and that Persia could be restored to her previous grandeur at some point in the not-too-distant future. All right, now for all of you into metaphysics, got one from the Culture File. For the last 2 months, this is according to the Associated Press, for the last 2 months, almost all the planets... let's see how many I've messed this up. I'm sorry. Six planets have aligned in the sky. Now, for the past 2 months, they've all been hiding behind the sun, but now they've all emerged and they're arrayed in a grand line above the rising sun. Mercury, Venus, Mars, and Jupiter are visible. And you can also see Uranus and Neptune if you have binoculars or a small telescope. So I think this is just really cool. These planets are aligning. The planets are aligning, so to speak. Well, not so to speak. They're actually aligning. And what's interesting is that they're aligning along the ecliptic, which is the path that the sun appears to travel in the sky to those of us here on Earth. Astrologers have always been fascinated by planetary alignments, and the doomsayers of 2012... In and outside of the Mahmoud Ahmadinejad regime, the doomsayers of 2012 have been prophesying a mystical alignment on December 21st, 2012, which would be 12-21-2012, which is all kind of cool. Sit down, let's talk about the Illuminati and get into all that. But the 12th Imam, I mean, it's fun stuff to talk about. But the modern tools of astronomers, such as planetarium software, show otherwise absolutely no alignment at any time in 2012 of all the planets. Oh, we're all hoping for the end of the world. I mean, you know your life is pretty pathetic if you're hoping to be involved in the end of the world. That's like your big ambition. I just hope to be involved in the utter collapse and the collapse of society and Mad Max and all of that. I mean, come on, man, get a life. So there is going to be no alignment, but they do reveal a beautiful alignment visible during the month of May this year. Oh, I had one more joke. That reminds me. Wait a minute. I'll go through where are my jokes? Ah, here it is. Okay. Now, my extremely attractive audio engineer earlier has assigned I'm Fabulous as the official theme song of Barry Ho, because as of now until Election Day, he can do no wrong. And if you think he can do any wrong, you're obviously insane or a kook or a twelver or a birther or a deather or a truther or something like that. You're all crazy. So Barry Ho sits down with some sap reporter on Cinco de Mayo. Oh, yeah. And he actually says, here's what he says. He says, well, Michelle and I were sitting around the other night and we were talking. And I said, Michelle, what's your favorite food? And she said Mexican. You don't want to be between Michelle and a tamale. Ladies and gentlemen, I have no journalism degree. But if I had been present, I would have said, Mr. Ho, wait a second. I've been married to my wife for very nearly 20 years now. We've been married for, well, it'd be 20 years in June, right? 20th anniversary coming up. I'm going to take my baby down to San Diego. We're going to have some fun. Now, Mr. President, I don't know anyone in my relatively large circle of friends who's been married for more than 18 months who doesn't already know what his wife's favorite food is. That has never come up in a conversation between us ever, ever. Maybe on our second date. Maybe. How long have you been married, Mr. President? He's like 20-some-odd years, right? He's been married. You expect me to believe that you actually said to Michelle, you actually asked her what's your favorite food? Happened to ask her that on Cinco de Mayo? Do you expect us to believe that, Mr. President? I think that's ground for impeachment that you would insult the intelligence of Americans like that. To actually expect that we would believe that you had that conversation with your wife after 20-some-odd years of marriage. It's frankly unbelievable, Mr. President. Could you please tell us what really happened? Okay, I'm sorry. Am I just suspicious? I don't have my tinfoil hat on, but I just don't buy it. I don't believe that conversation took place. And the fact that I haven't heard a peep out of anyone about such an obvious prevarication right on the air in front of all of us, right to our faces like we're idiots.
You don't want to be between Michelle and a tamale. And we're all supposed to just laugh. Oh, the president, he loves his wife, and they're talking about food the other night. He's so witty and charming.
All right. Oh, man. Anyway, do you buy it? Do you believe that ever? Besides, my wife, her favorite food, it depends. What time of day is it? What type of season is it? Where are we? Are we going somewhere? I mean, that's what the conversation would be. It wouldn't be, oh, look at my watch. It's May 4th. Oh, Mexican. Oh, you have a speech to make tomorrow. It's Mexican. I love tamales. Long as they're low fat. All right, do I have anything else? Maybe I should just end it there. Mercifully just end this thing. No. We've got one from the Culture File. This was shocking, ladies and gentlemen. Las Vegas, Nevada, from Channel 8 News in Las Vegas. A mob of young people bombarded the City Shop convenience store on Sunset and Pecos in Vegas and stole about $600 worth of merchandise. Have you seen this video? Yeah, all these little thugs darted in and they grabbed beer and Cokes and Monster drinks and Rockstar and they stuffed it in their pants and their pockets. Hey, those loose-fitting baggy pants, I have been vindicated. You should have seen these punks stuffing stuff down their baggy pants. They filled those baggy pants with Fritos and soda pops and Rockstars. I saw it right there on video, folks. I told you what those baggy pants were for and now we all know. Anyway, the tactic is relatively new. It's based on social media internet conversation. It's called a swarm. It's when young punks get together on Facebook and Twitter and whatever, and they all decide what store to hit. They hit it all at once. Huh. Yeah, it's terrifying, for crying out loud. Now, the owner of the store said, quote, "We were blessed nobody was hurt," unquote. Well, I don't know, blessed. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. You were robbed, so I don't think you were blessed.
It was a miracle.
Maybe it was a miracle that nobody was hurt. Anyway, getting robbed is usually not part of a blessing, at least not in any religion that I've studied. But he feels blessed that nobody was hurt. I suppose that's fine. He hopes this crowd doesn't try to swarm another store. Well, I would ask Mr. Store Owner, what could possibly stop them? Seeing as they just did it to your store in front of God and everybody on national TV and on the Drudge Report, what's going to stop them? What's that?
Gun.
Oh, a gun. Well, wait a minute. And now he says, quote, "You can't allow this to happen," unquote, after he allowed it to happen. Folks, there's only one thing that can stop a swarm of teenagers who are robbing your store, and that's to point the gun at the tallest one and say, "Get out of my store or I'm going to blow your brains out." And you know what happens to a swarm then? They swarm out of the store. Anyway, and I know people say, well, you certainly shouldn't shoot anyone over a robbery of just stuff. And I agree, you shouldn't. But you should point a gun at them and tell them to get out of my store. Certainly shouldn't shoot anyone unless they pull a gun. You know, then that changes everything. But how are we going to stop this from happening unless we punish these punks for doing this and do it severely and in a public way is all I'm saying. Okay, I talked earlier about the Obama recovery. I'm going a little long, but only a couple of minutes, folks. Because there's only like one or two stories here that I'm actually interested in. But just hang with me, okay? The Obama recovery rears its ugly head. Processed fryer oil, that's oil in which has been cooked fillet of fish, French fries, tater tots, and possibly, what are those little corn hush puppies? Possibly hush puppies. Okay, this is processed fryer oil. It's not trash. It's called yellow grease, and it is actually traded. Its value is driven by higher prices of gas and ethanol because people use it as biofuel. They put it in their diesel vehicles, okay? Now, recyclers typically contract with restaurants to pick up the waste product. The grease is cleaned and sold for use as biofuel, livestock feed, and other products. The beauty of the free market. Very little gets wasted, okay? Or there's at least, I shouldn't say very little gets wasted, but there's an economic opportunity behind everything if people are free to think and act in their own economic best interest. And as long as everybody's honest about it, then we need very little regulation. We just need laws against stealing, that's all. And the rest, it can be free. But anyway, listen to this. Rises in fuel prices, according to Reuters, have led to an increase in the number of used fryer grease robberies. Yes, fryer grease rustlers are roaming restaurant alleys in the United States. Grease thefts have spiked whenever fuel prices climb, and that's what we're going through right now.
That's a dirty job.
Yeah. Well, whether you're trading it on the honest market or stealing it, it's a dirty job. But, I mean, that's just pretty pathetic, folks, that people would stoop to the level of stealing grease. Not even good grease like you see at the hardware store. We're talking like stuff they dump out the bottom of the fryer at McDonald's. People are stealing it as the Obama recovery rolls on. Okay, I don't care about this story. Oh, here we go, folks. So I spoke with you earlier about the Alinskyite tactic of marginalizing your adversary by creating the perception that he's crazy. Or loony or kooky. Call it what you want. Well, listen to this. Sally Shaheen is a Muslim actress. She has been branded a whore and a Western slut after appearing topless on the cover of the German edition of Playboy magazine. And Islamic fanatics have posted threatening internet messages. She says she fears being spit on and shamed. Her parents are said to have reacted with horror. Her mother has apparently cut off all contact with her. She said, "What I want to say with these photos is, girls, we don't have to live according to the rules imposed upon us." Unquote. So, I referred to Alinsky. I apologize. The Sun, which is the newspaper in England from whence this story came, the Sun says that it's Islamic fanatics who have branded her a whore and a Western slut, and they're sending messages to her on her Facebook page saying, "You're a whore and you're a slut." Why? Well, she appeared naked in Playboy, which generally, to me, indicates you're a whore and a slut. So, folks, just because you think people who are in the pornography industry, just because you think they're whores and sluts and they're despicable, that doesn't mean you are a fanatic, okay? It means you're normal. People in Playboy, the women in Playboy magazine are whores, sluts, pigs. Call them what you want. They are the destroyers of families. They are the threat to the harmonious marriage of millions of men every day. And I'm not a fanatic. I just don't like whores and sluts threatening the foundational building block upon which our civilization is built, and that is a marriage in which both partners are loyal to one another. Loyal is not the word I'm looking for. There's another word. Faithful. That's it. Faithful. So if you appear naked in a magazine that's going to be generally disseminated to the public, you are a whore and a slut, and you're a threat to civilization. You should be arrested. And the people who took your picture and sell the magazine, they should be arrested. And if convicted, they should be executed. The whore, the slut, she could probably be rehabilitated. But the pornography peddlers, they should be executed. Okay, I don't care about that story. That story, well, let's do it. I got I got two more. So before you start the music. Columbus, Ohio, from the Associated Press. A man charged under an Ohio fetal homicide law for taking his pregnant girlfriend to an abortion clinic at gunpoint pled guilty last Thursday to attempted murder, weapons, and other charges. Dominic Holt Reed pulled a gun on his girlfriend Yolanda Burgess and forced her to drive to the abortion clinic at gunpoint. The woman slipped a note to a clinic employee and said, "My boyfriend has a gun on me." And the clinic employee called the police. The woman has since delivered a healthy baby boy. So the kid survived, thank heaven. Not a miracle, though. It was not miraculous, and nobody was blessed. I suppose the kid was blessed. Got his life. Prosecutors brought their case against the boyfriend using a 1996 law that says a person can be found guilty of murder for causing the unlawful termination of a pregnancy. Which is sad, in that that sentence implies that here in America, perhaps the last best hope for freedom and true religion on the planet, there is a lawful way to terminate a pregnancy. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is just sad.
What about the gunpoint being a woman? That's not lawful.
That's not lawful. No. We got to draw the line somewhere. Right? All right. Now, one more story, folks. This is it. It's from the Washington Times. A year-long sting operation culminated in the federal government announcing that it has gone to court to stop Rainbow Acres Farm from selling its contraband to its customers all across the Washington area. The product in question is unpasteurized milk. That's right. I know, we've been working hard on the Osama bin Laden thing for 8 years. That all culminated in the past few weeks. But folks, this is the big story. Unpasteurized milk dealers out there in the rural areas of the country working virtually unregulated by the Food and Drug Administration. Well, those days are over, ladies and gentlemen. We can all breathe a sigh of relief. The Food and Drug Administration is on the case. They have busted these farmers who are selling what is known as raw milk. That's right. The FDA says that raw milk should never be consumed. Never. Tamara Ward, who's a spokeswoman for the FDA, said it is our position that raw milk should never be consumed. Well, how many people got sick? Well, I don't know how many people got sick, but we only started pasteurizing milk in the 1920s. So, raw milk was consumed. Perhaps the FDA will go and exhume the bodies of all those people who consumed all that raw milk and prosecute them. I know, it seems like it doesn't make any sense, but hey, we're the FDA. We need a lot of patronage jobs. We have cousins. We have nephews. These kids are out of college. They don't know what to do. All right. That's it, folks. I'm out of here. I want to thank Bob Inyart, my friends at KGOV.com, everyone at Denver Bible Church, all my friends at Personhood USA and American Right to Life, and of course, my good brothers and sisters over at Theology Online. And no show would be complete without thanking my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.